afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Lifestyle CEO Show. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where you're empowered to break all the rules, build your own corporate ladder, and create the life you love. Today's show is sponsored by the Indie Beauty Network. Visit IndieBeauty.com to enjoy our free weekly newsletter and learn how you can take advantage of benefits like affordable products liability insurance for your business. Be an indie, not an outie. Visit IndieBeauty.com today at IndieBeauty.com. You know, last week I was in South Africa with a nonprofit women's empowerment group called Vital Voices. You can read about their mission at vitalvoices.org and see that what they do is they work to give women around the world voices, and that is women in countries whose voices have traditionally been silenced. Of course, my own personal mission in line with that is to empower women financially, because I have found that when a woman is empowered financially, she is also empowered in other areas of her life, and then she's able to speak up for herself and gain the confidence that she needs to be successful in so many ways. So I hope you guys will visit the website at IndieBeauty.com and check out the blogs from last week about my visit to South Africa and learn about some of the partnerships I'm developing over there to help empower some of the women in the more rural areas of a variety of different countries in South Africa. And speaking of being empowered, of course, you know, I always love to bring you guests who have written books to help people be empowered as small business owners. And today, of course, is no exception. I'm really excited to have on the show today Bill Collier. He is the author of How to Succeed as a Small Business Owner and Still Have a Life. That's the name of his book. And his business is called Collier Business Advisors in St. Louis, Missouri. At that business, he provides coaching, training, and strategic planning services for small to mid-sized businesses and their owners. And Bill has written this book, which is sort of like a manual for putting your business on autopilot, which is, of course, a goal of so many small business owners who are wearing all the hats, at least for a period of time as they get their businesses going. So we're going to hear all kinds of tips today from Bill on living life and owning business at the same time and loving it. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
Well, I'm really excited to have you. Now, I have read most of your book. I had hours and hours and actually days on an airplane last week. And so I have had the opportunity to sit down without phone call or email interruptions and read quite a bit of this book. And I'm going to ask you some questions about some of the tips and stuff, the strategies that you offer. But first, Bill, I'd like for you to give our listeners a little bit of background about you and how you came into the role of an entrepreneur yourself.
Okay, I'll put in a plug for another book that I think is required reading for every business owner, and that's The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. I'm sure you've read it. And
yes.
One of the things, I started my first business. It was called BC Group International, and we were a medical electronics distribution company. And I started it the way Michael Gerber talks about in his book, The E-Myth. I had what he calls an entrepreneurial seizure. And here's the way it works. And I'll bet you most of your listeners started their businesses much the same way. And here's the way it works. You're working at something. You get pretty good at something. You have a skill. And one day, for no apparent reason, you wake up and you say, you know, instead of doing this for this other person, I could be my own boss. And so you get this idea in your mind that won't go away that says, I need to start my own business and be my own boss. And that's basically what happened to me. Now, I had a little bit of an additional boost because my company, I worked for GE at the time, General Electric. It was back during the Jack Welch era in the late 80s. And my division was being sold, and my company asked me to go work for the buyer of my division and move from St. Louis to Chicago. Well, the problem was, two problems. The big really insurmountable problem was my wife and I were not Cubs fans, and so that really wouldn't do. But the second problem was my wife's parents were getting older, and they really needed her here to help out. Mm-hmm. And so neither of us really was interested in moving, and so I already had this entrepreneurial desire going anyway, and then this was really the thing that put the time frame in motion. So I convinced her that starting a business was a good idea, and that's what we did. So we ran that business for 16 years. We just sold it in 2005. And today I'm involved in two different businesses.
Now, Bill, when you were at GE and you made that transition, tell us a little bit about that. Did you just do like a hot cut from your job, or did you start the business on the side first? How did you make that transition?
Well, many folks do start on the side. I'm a proponent. I believe in doing it that way, by the way, if it's possible. In my case, because of the division being sold and because of changes coming rather quickly, I went ahead and elected to just take a severance package. Now, in my case, it was not a tremendous amount of money, but the thing that really helped me was the company provided as part of this package a whole year's worth of health care insurance,
mm-hmm.
which, as everyone knows, is very expensive.
Yeah, that's so great.
Yeah, we had two little kids, and so it really helped us to mm-hmm. have a cushion for the mm-hmm. first year of business.
Mm-hmm. I love that idea of an entrepreneurial seizure. You're sitting at your desk or taking your shower, getting ready for work one day, and all of a sudden you realize, you know, there could be something different here. And that does perfectly describe me, you, and so many, many other listeners. So thank you for sharing that. And so now you don't have the medical electronics distribution company anymore, but you're involved in two other businesses, plus you're running Call Your Business Advisors.
Well, Call Your Business Advisors is one of the two businesses that I
currently
am involved in the ownership of.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Now, one of the things that your book says close to the very beginning, which I found very intriguing, was your business should serve you, not the other way around. And when I talk with entrepreneurs who are just on fire for some kind of passion that they have for something, and they dig in, they roll their sleeves all the way up, and at some point, I guess maybe it's fair to say they have another kind of entrepreneurial seizure where they realize that they're serving their business instead of the other way around. Can you tell us a little bit about how we, as maybe especially as a startup person who really is excited and doesn't really feel like they need to get any sleep or do anything else because they've got this passion for this business, how can we avoid moving into that area and kind of, you know, try and keep things in a little bit more focus where we are served by the business instead of the other way around?
Well, I think the first thing to do is before you even put a pencil to paper and start writing a business plan, that's not job one. Job one is really coming up with some personal goals before you write your business goals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're a young person with a young family, you have very different needs than somebody who's 10 years from retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if your goal is to simply make a decent living and someday shuffle off into the sunset, that's different than somebody who says, I want my wife, my kids, my grandkids, my cousins, my brother, all to derive an income from this business enterprise. That's going to require a pretty good-sized company.
Right.
So you really need to know what the heck it is you want to get out of this business now and in the future before you can really start working on a business plan.
How do you do that? Because I know everybody's story is different, and we're talking in generalities here, but I work with a lot of people, and I know a lot of the listeners are sort of going, okay, business plan. I know I need to know have basic information in my plan, but I really don't know what my long-term goals are with the business. And how do you help people kind of focus on specific things that need to be considered and do? Let me give you an example. I recently read Martha Stewart's book. I can't remember what it's called, Martha Rules or something like that, and she has this chapter in there about business planning. She goes on and on in Martha fashion about how detailed it needs to be. You need to have a wide-angle lens, you need to have a telescope, and you need to write down every detail. And then at the end of the chapter, she says, oh, by the way, I never had a business plan. And I just thought that was so interesting because a lot of successful people say they'd have a plan in hindsight, but they really didn't have one. So for people to really benefit from, you know, seeing, you know, the benefit of a business plan, can you help with some specific things to consider if someone is sitting down with a limited amount of time trying to write a plan when 6 months from now, you know, sometimes it may be totally irrelevant?
Well, are you talking now, Donna Maria, about business plans or this personal planning stuff that I mentioned?
Well, that's a really good question. I guess really I'm wondering how you distinguish between the two if you are, in fact, a person like you were, as you said when you started BC Group. You were a husband. You had two young children. Did you find it hard to distinguish between the personal and the business goals when you were preparing for that business?
Well, I think the personal goals don't have to be super specific. And you'll hear a lot of people, and I even mention this in my book, that your goals should be specific. But at the same time, I understand that your personal life, it's not a business. And really, if you tell your husband or your wife that, hey, let's sit down and draw up this personal plan, if that person is not an entrepreneurial type like you are, they'll probably balk at the idea because, you know, who wants to turn their hopes and dreams and down to a bullet list on a piece of paper? For most people don't think that way. So I don't think it's important on the personal side to be real, real specific, but I think you and your spouse, if you're married, have to at least be on the same sheet of music. In other words, if one says, I want to put the kids in parochial school, and the other one says public school, and one says, I want to retire and travel the country in an RV, and the other one says, I want to retire and stay in five-star hotels, you're on different sheets of music. So I think as long as you are going in the same direction and pulling in the same direction, from a personal plan standpoint, you're in pretty good shape. And then you review that once in a while. So you sit down maybe once a year, you go on a little vacation, you sit down and talk about it. And again, as long as both spouses are pretty much in the same direction, then you're okay. Mm-hmm. On the personal side. On the business side, I do think it's very important to have a plan. I think it should be as specific as possible. And your goals and your business plan need to talk to and take into consideration whatever your personal goals are. Again, when do I want to retire? Where do I want to live? How much money do I want to earn? Those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so once you start working on your business plan, I think the mistake most entrepreneurs make is they see business plans that are these thick binders, as thick as the dictionary that people write up, and of course they never get used. They sit on a shelf. And it's the business plan that you write up to go get a loan from a bank or an SBA loan or to attract an investor. And those are important. But the plan you need to run your business on a daily basis is probably about two or three sheets of paper, and that's it. Because if you need to read six paragraphs to find out what your revenue target is for the year, nobody's going to use that. You need something that's useful and dog-eared by the end of the year. You keep it on your desk. You refer to it a lot, and it really calls for accountability on the part of the business owner and all the other folks on the management team.
Right. Now, have you found that for most of these business owners that we're describing, the smaller business owners with the families and all these kinds of things to juggle, that they really, the business plan is extremely dynamic. It's not something that you write down and that just sort of stays the same, that it really changes a lot and you need to kind of keep up with those changes and make adjustments fairly regularly?
Yeah, and I think that's okay as long as you're not waking up in the morning and just going to work and saying, let's see where the wind blows me today. Because that's what happens, and it used to happen to me. It happens to a lot of folks, where you let the daily grind dictate your activities, your schedule, put stress on your life. It does all the bad things that we know about that happens to small business owners. And I think the way to take control of that is to get the important things that need to be done off your business plan and onto your to-do list or your schedule. And if, you know, some people like to use the phrase, make appointments with yourself. If that's what you have to say to make it make sense to you, then that's fine. But you can't just let the winds of business blow you around. You've got to be proactive and take charge.
Right. It sounds like what you're talking about, too, is maintaining a great deal of focus. Because it is so easy, Bill, as you know, to be sidetracked. Because there are legitimate opportunities that come along every day that are not inside your main area of focus, but which, well, maybe they'd work out. And so do you find that's one of the things that people kind of have to remind themselves to do is, you know, when opportunities come along that aren't within their area of focus at this time, they just have to resist the urge to go down those paths?
Yes, and that's why In the business plan model that I recommend, the very first thing at the top of the page is a mission statement. And I'm not talking about a flowery, high-minded mission statement that you make into a plaque that you hang on the wall to impress people. I'm talking about just a simple statement that says, here's what business we're in. Mm-hmm. Because what you just said is very true. People constantly are attracted to other opportunities that are off on some tangent, you know, it's a sidetrack.
Right.
And they go after that and they ignore the business at hand. And so I think it's very important to remind yourself what business you're in. One of the things that I find helps a lot.
We're going to talk about mission statements. I love it. We're going to talk about that when we come back from our first break. I want to remind you guys that next week, Romanus Walter, the Kickstart guy, is going to be here to help us kickstart our businesses for the new year. So be sure to stay tuned for that. Do join us on our call today with Bill Collier, author of How to Succeed as a Small Business Owner and Still Have a Life. The toll-free number is 800-773-0355. This is the Lifestyle CEO Show. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to the Lifestyle CEO Show, everyone. I'm Donna Maria. We've got Bill Collier on the show today. How to Succeed as a Small Business Owner and Still Have a Life is the name of his book. And before our break, Bill was talking about the importance of a mission statement. Everyone's heard that before, but Bill, let's break it down. Can you share with us what is a mission statement and how should it be used by a small business owner to their benefit?
Well, there have been all kinds of books written about mission statements, and the kind of mission statement I'm talking about has nothing to do with the long, fancy mission statements that people make into plaques that they hang on the wall. I'm talking about something that will help you focus on the job at hand. I'm a very nuts and bolts type of guy, and I believe in coming up with things that are not so much theory, but things you can actually use in your daily business life. And if I write a business plan, and it's only a page or two, and right at the top of the page it says, we're in the business of, and it tells us, you know, our purpose for being in business, at the very least, that's going to be, now, this isn't foolproof, of course, but it's going to be a reminder to me every time I look at that page, here's what we're all about. And when these side opportunities come along, and it happens to every entrepreneur, they want to go, you know, running off the next opportunity that they come across, mm-hmm. Hopefully it helps keep you between the guardrails. Again, it's not foolproof, but it's a constant reminder for the
business
owner.
And how should they be used, or should they be used, as a marketing tool?
Well, if you're going to use something like that as a marketing tool, you're looking for something else. There you're looking for something to, you know, to impress your customers and that sort of thing. In my opinion, if you're going to do something like that, first of all, it's probably the wrong reason for doing it. That gets into another area. I would prefer to advise a business owner to come up with a list of values that they find mm-hmm. important, that are really truly important to that business owner, that he or she wants that business to adhere to. And if you want to give something to customers to impress them and brag about, that I would trot that out before I would trot out a mission statement.
Okay, so kind of like your core values, so that the customers can buy into not only your product or service, but the values behind your offering of it?
As long as you practice what you preach. You never want to do something like that just because you want to impress someone. You know, the right reason to do it is because that's the kind of business you want to have.
Uh-huh.
But if you really practice what you preach and walk the talk, then I think it's okay to share that with customers.
Now, in business planning, Bill, is there a difference between what a company's mission is and what their vision is, or is there overlap? I've seen companies with both.
Well, you know, I've helped people write both. I've written both for my own companies. And honestly, I think that those things are okay. And each person, if you ask 20 different people the difference between a mission and a vision, you'll probably get 20 different answers. Typically, the mission talks about what are we about in the here and now, and the vision says what do we want to be when the company grows up, you know, 5, 10 years from now. And I think it's a distinction that from a daily standpoint, when we're talking about small business owners struggling to succeed and still have a life, but that almost for me borders on some kind of theory. It's nice to have them, but I don't see those as being the things that are really going to make or break success for the very small business owner.
And so in terms of struggling to face the challenges of owning a business and still having a life, in your experience, Bill, what have you seen as small business owners' biggest challenges in that area? Are there two or three things that you've seen that people contend with time and time again in this particular area, trying to have a life while they're running a business and doing just about everything, wearing all the hats?
Yeah, I'd say bad hiring decisions is probably at the top of the list. And if somebody doesn't think that a bad hiring decision can make them their life literally miserable, then they've never made a bad hiring decision, because I can tell you it's one of the worst things that business owners do is they hire from the gut. You know, they'll meet somebody and in 5 minutes they've determined whether they're going to hire this person or not. So bad hiring decisions is at the top of the list. I think failing to delegate is probably number two. And of course there are all sorts of things that come into play related to those, such as you may make a good hiring decision, but then you have high turnover because you don't pay attention to the things that make people want to stay with your company. So you know, the personnel piece, the hiring and retention, and then delegation.
Well, let's talk about both of those, and maybe let's start with delegation, because I guess you have to have an intention to delegate before you even get into hiring, right? So
yes.
In terms of delegation, I'm sure you must run across this all the time, you know, the sort of holding on to your sandbox kind of mentality. What kinds of challenges do you see people facing when it comes to delegating? There seems to be sometimes a fear among small business owners of handing off anything. I don't know if it's control. What do you see when it comes to that issue?
Well, I think there's three things that keep us from delegating. First one is there's no lack of self-esteem and self-confidence among entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs are very self-confident people. In fact, it's one of the traits that leads us into business in the first place. And we believe nobody can do it as well as we can, and if you don't believe us, just ask us. So that's the first thing. The second one is these companies, they're our babies. You know, we get all wrapped up in them. We identify with them. They become part of us. And we're so interested in seeing that company succeed and turn into whatever vision we had when we started it that we try to oversee every aspect of it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then the third part is nobody's really taught us how to delegate. So unless you've worked in a business where you've been exposed to delegation and you know the value of it and you know how to do it, that becomes a stumbling block. So those are the three things that I see that get in the way.
Well, and in the spirit of your book and the understanding that unless you delegate, you're going to have a business but not a life, let's talk a little bit about how to overcome, you know, these three things that you talked about. What are some of the things that you recommend people do when it's clear they need to delegate, but there's just this kind of entrepreneurial seizure, for lack of a better term, when it comes to handing off responsibility? I mean, do you recommend that people do it a little at a time or in stages, based on their personality? What do you tell people in general how to deal with this?
Well, I'll share with your listeners a trick for knowing how when you're ready to delegate or not. And here's what it is. First thing you do is you pull out one of your own business cards and you look it over. And if it has the word CEO or president on it, then you're ready to delegate.
Okay.
In other words, if you own a business, you absolutely have to delegate, and if you don't, it's going to hold you back. And here are six steps that I think these are very quick. First one is hire good people. Now, that's easy to say, hard to do, but that's at the crux of this. If you don't have good people, then delegating is probably going to be a disaster. So hire good people. Number two is trust your people. If you have good people, then you need to trust them. A lot of us fall short in that area. Number three, make sure that your people have the training and the information and all the resources they need to do whatever it is you want them to do. Number four, this is very important, and this gets into the how to delegate, is tell them what the expected results are, but don't tell them what method to use.
Okay.
So in other words, let them figure it out, because that's how they grow and they learn, and they'll have more respect for you and for themselves, and everybody wins if you let them figure out how to do it. Just tell them what the expected results are.
Okay.
And number five, this is very important, is get the heck out of their way. So make yourself available, but also make yourself scarce. If you hover over them and check in every 5 minutes, you're not delegating, you're micromanaging, and there's a big difference.
Uh-huh.
And then the last step is simply check on progress periodically. So you go back once in a while, and you get a progress report at reasonable intervals, and you let the person learn and grow, and hopefully they'll come to you with questions. And before you know it, they've learned a new skill, and you freed up some time.
Hmm. Those are great steps. Any tips for choosing between a hire or a contractor?
Well, I think that's so unique to the situation that I would hesitate to even try to offer any suggestions there. I would say that if you can get by with a part-timer before a full-timer, do it. Probably would say, and I'll qualify this by saying this isn't always true, but probably would hire a contractor before I'd hire an employee, only because it's more of an arm's length arrangement and, no strings attached and that sort of thing from a cost standpoint, from having to supply them with benefits, certainly if you're trying to keep your costs down. But when you hire the employee, hopefully what you're able to do is cultivate a real relationship, gain some loyalty, gain some trust. So there are benefits either way, and I think it's so dependent on the person and the company and the situation.
Yeah, I guess it would be different depending on the situation. And then, is it true, or have you found that contracting first when you can kind of helps avoid the number one problem, which is bad hiring decisions?
Yeah, but I would prefer to see the business owner, rather than to shy away from that, I'd rather see them learn the skills of hiring, how to recruit, how to interview, how to screen, how to hire. And I'd hate to see them miss the opportunity, because eventually, if the business grows, they're going to eventually have to hire anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may as well learn how to do it and do it well. Using a contractor for the right reason is fine, but using it because you're shying away from the hard work of learning how to hire correctly is probably just putting off the inevitable, because, again, you're going to have to do it someday.
Right. Now, are there any general principles, Bill, that people can use to determine what to delegate first? How do you, you're wearing all the hats, you finally have a little bit of profit coming in. You could delegate a million things, I guess. Are there any tips on what to delegate first, or what sorts of things to think about delegating first?
Sure. There are a few things, and I talk about this in my book, but one of the examples I give is I read somewhere where a CEO of a good-sized company wrote that if a CEO of a company makes a decision that impacts the company inside of 30 days, he or she shouldn't be making that decision. You have to delegate that to someone else. Now, that's true in a big company. In a little bitty company, you might take that same spirit. Certainly, you have to make decisions that impact your company maybe this hour, today, this week. But you could take the spirit of that statement and say, okay, in my business, I'm going to try to not make decisions. Let's say you have a couple of folks that work for you.
Mm-hmm.
If a decision impacts something that is going to cost the company less than X dollars, and just pick a number, $100, $500, pick some arbitrary number, then I'm going to let somebody else make that. Or if it's something that is not mission critical, I'm going to let somebody else make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
Another approach might be to sit down and really give some thought. What are the best uses of my time and talents in this business as the owner? And I want to focus my time and attention in those areas and delegate these areas of lesser importance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
third way to do it. Go ahead, Tom.
No, No, I mean that's such a good and pointed question to remind people to ask themselves. I think it bears repeating what you said. What is the best use of my time and talents right now? I love that you said that, because have you come across people who will, you know, explain that, you know, they can't go to a networking meeting, or they can't spend time listening to a fantastic free radio show like this one with a great guest like you, because they have to finish up some kind of office management thing.
I hear it all the time.
Manufacturing of something, or delivering the flowers, you know, for their florist business instead of having somebody else doing it.
Yeah, I hear it all the time, and sometimes that's appropriate, and sometimes it's unavoidable. But when it becomes a day-in, day-out situation, that's when a business owner really needs to step back and figure out what they can do to improve their situation.
Mm-hmm.
And another way, to help would be to bring somebody in. It doesn't have to be a business consultant, but it could just be a trusted associate, you know, somebody that owns a small business, could be your spouse, could be just anybody whose opinion you trust, and have them spend a little time in the office if they have it, have some time to spare, and just watch what you're doing and watch what's going on, and ask for their independent, impartial opinion. You know, do you see me doing things that are using up my time, that if you were pretend for the moment you're our chairman of our board, if we had a board, would you want to see the company president doing the stuff that I'm doing? And chances are the answer is no.
Yeah.
That's
a great question, and I bet a lot of people out there listening are going, ooh, I'm not going to like the answer to that one. Because it is so tough to transition from doing everything yourself when you have, in fact, for, you know, many months at a minimum, been doing that. But your advice is so great and so timely for delegation. We're going to talk a little bit more about delegation. And also, Bill, we're going to talk about some of the things your book talks about in terms of owning a business instead of just creating another job for yourself. That's going to be a fun conversation. We're going to talk about that and some financial things, too. We're going to take our next break, and we're going to be back with Bill Collier, author of How to Succeed as a Small Business Owner and Still Have a Life. Don't touch that mouse. This is the Lifestyle CEO Show. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to the final segment of this week's Lifestyle CEO Show. And before we pick up our conversation with Bill Collier, I want to let you guys know, if you didn't see it in my newsletter this morning, that today is the final Lifestyle CEO Show. No, I'm not signing off of Cyber Air, but I am changing the name of this radio show. Effective next week, we are going to be the Indie Business Radio Show. Now, people say to me, what's Indy? Does that have anything to do with NASCAR? No, it doesn't. Indy, I-N-D-I-E, is the shorthand term for independent. It's in the dictionary. It describes a small business owner, and we are the Indy Business Radio Show, and we are going to be continuing to bring you the great guests, the great authors, and the people and personalities that can help you take your business to the next level. So I just want you guys to know that I've enjoyed serving you as the Lifestyle CEO, and next week I'll be the Chief Executive Indy, bringing you the Indy Business Radio Show, and we will just pick it up from there. And right now we're going to pick it up from there with Bill Collier, our guest today. He's been talking with us about the art of owning a business and still having a life. And, Bill, I love the 6 steps you gave about, you know, transitioning to delegating and engaging the services of someone to help you grow your business. So if you're just now tuning in, you'll have to make sure you go to the website at lifestyleceo.com and download your audio so you can hear Bill's great 6 steps there. Bill, I want to spend the final segment of our show today helping people who actually are getting their business off the ground now. They're in launch mode. And as your book says, How to Succeed as a Small Business Owner, in Section 3, I'm going to read from that if that's okay. It says, if you put in long hours, have trouble getting away from work for more than a day or two at a time, and don't make any more money than you did when you worked for someone else, you haven't created a business. You've created a job. And that really brings it down to, you know, a basic level that we can all understand. But what do you say, Bill, to the person who's just now getting started, and in fact, it actually is a job, their business is a job. What do you say to that person about goal setting and planning so that while it's okay to be that way now, how can they move forward and do something, you know, plan for the time when they have a business and not just a job?
Well, let me start by saying that I don't want to ever have someone think that what I'm saying is that it's easy. Because in my opinion, there's nothing harder than owning and running a small business. It's absolutely a very difficult thing to do. And it's not for everyone. And when people are starting off, there's just no substitute, there's no shortcut for just good old-fashioned hard work. Now, that may sound strange coming from a guy who wrote a book, part of the title says, and still have a life, but, you know, the still have a life part comes later. And you can't start off in anything other than high gear. You've got to get out there and really put in the effort. You may have to put in long hours. You're probably going to be under some stress, both physically and mentally, and it's very difficult. But what the trap that many entrepreneurs fall into is they never get out of that gear. They never get out of that mode. And 2 or 3 or 10 years later, they're still doing everything themselves, and they're up to their elbows in every aspect of the business. And the only light at the end of the tunnel is a train coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's perfectly, in fact, it's normal to start a business where you're putting in lots of hours, you're working very hard, you're probably under some degree of stress, but you've got a plan for emerging out of that, you know, that infancy, that business infancy, and reaching a point where you've got a few people that you can delegate to, even if they're subcontractors, even if they're outsiders.
Right.
They don't have to be employees. But you've got some sort of a plan for getting out of that mode and getting to where you're to the extent you can be on autopilot. Now, I understand if you're a small one-person home-based business, that's more difficult than if I have 8 or 10 employees to delegate to. I understand that. But I believe there are things that you can do in any size business to ease up the dependency on you being involved in every decision and in every aspect.
That's good. What you're describing is just not getting stuck in that gear for too long a period of time. And that gives people who really are sort of in that mode right now by way of necessity kind of permission to stay there for a short period of time. It's like, you know, when there's something that comes along that disappoints you, it's okay to mope for a little while, but get out of that after a little while and free yourself up for other things.
Right.
So let's talk about that from the perspective of finances, Bill, and maybe this will be the final sort of big topic and probably one of the biggest ones, I guess, that any small business owner can think about. I talk with small business owners all the time who have, you know, great fun running their businesses. They're making enough money to, you know, do more than just subsist. You know, they're making a little bit of profit. And once it gets to the point where they are ready to take it to the next level, whatever that is, one of the things that many of them, particularly women, Bill, seem to struggle with is setting financial goals for the business. Can you give us some principles in terms of, well, maybe first of all, why is it that people sometimes seem to struggle with that, small business owners seem to struggle with, you know, setting specific financial goals? And then number two, what are some of the things that that we can that you can share with listeners to do to help them set those goals, and how can that benefit their business?
Well, I think one of the reasons that people hesitate to do that is because, for whatever reason, they've never really been exposed to business finance. And in other words, they may not know what an income statement or a profit and loss statement is, balance sheet, cash flow statement. They don't know what net profit before tax, gross profit. You've really got to have some degree of understanding of all those terms and principles before you can really wrap your arms around them and start using them in your business. So one of the things, I learned this very early. I had gone to college and taken accounting and didn't pay a bit of attention. I was a 19-year-old kid, and so I didn't pay much attention. I got decent grades, but I forgot it as quick as I learned it. So when I started my small business, I went back to college and took accounting again. This time I just audited the class. I wasn't interested in the credit. I wanted to actually be there for the learning. And this time I paid attention because I had skin in the game. It was going to impact my business. And so I think it's a good first step is, however you get the information, whether you do it on your own or take a course at school, however you do it, get some information so you truly understand. You don't have to turn into a CPA, but you have to understand the basics of business accounting and finance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now you've got the tools. And then as you start setting your goals, I think a couple of things to remember. One is don't get overly optimistic. You know, don't expect to take your little stay-at-home business and turn it into a $10 million a year enterprise in 3 years. It's not going to happen. So
not overnight anyway, right?
No. So be optimistic, but temper that with a good healthy dose of realistic.
Realism, okay.
And then the third thing to remember is that business targets, those aren't strategies. They're nothing more than goals and targets. You need a strategy behind the scenes, whether it's your sales and marketing, your people strategy, whatever it is. You've got to have some good, solid plans to drive the business. Just saying that we want to hit $1 million in revenue next year, that's not going to make it magically happen. You've got to have some things going on behind the scenes to make it happen.
Okay.
I always like to tell people, think in terms of the company you'd like to be in a year or two, and act like that size company now. So if you're at $500,000 in revenue now, and you want to be $1 million business in a couple of years, what resources, what systems, what processes, what kind of people do we need
mm-hmm.
if we're going to be $1 million business, and start working toward that now?
Right.
Because if you wait until you get there, you're probably not going to ever get there.
Mm-hmm. So having a good understanding of some of these financial issues, and that's probably not that difficult to do, to get kind of basic understanding. I noticed from your website that you have a workshop or a speaking topic that encompasses finance and accounting for non-financial people. Is that right?
Yeah, and I think that's the important part, is the non-financial people. If you can find a course in your hometown,
mm-hmm.
or a web, there are web courses too, that will be put in layperson's terms. That would be the ideal thing to start with.
Kind of like small business accounting for the rest of us.
There you go. Yes.
Or even for dummies, if I can borrow a very popular. Actually, that's probably a good place to start, is to go to an online book source and put that in and see what shows up, because I bet you're right. It's probably not that hard to wrap your hands around that. Well, and speaking of that too, Bill, an accountant, would you agree, is like one of the first people you can hire or engage to help you with your business, no matter how little or much money you're making?
Yes, and I'm going to say something that I absolutely don't want any of the accountants or financial people out there to think that I'm saying anything negative about them, but I never want to be in a situation where I am totally dependent on the input and advice of someone like an accountant or a banker or a lawyer, where I am absolutely, totally clueless in that area.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I'm not going to turn myself into an attorney or a CPA or a banker or anything like that, but mm-hmm. I sure would like to go into these conversations where they're giving me advice that are going to impact my life, my family's finances and well-being for many years to come. I'd sure like to sit down at that table at least knowing some of the basics of what it is we're discussing, because not every single professional out there is ethical and not everyone is equally proficient. And so you sit across the table from somebody who's either slightly unethical or slightly ill-advised, ill-informed, and the next thing you know, you're taking some bad advice and putting it into action. And so I think you owe it to yourself to at least learn enough to, again, where people just can't blow smoke and you have a sense that this sounds reasonable to me.
Right. And by the way, I just remembered this too, Bill. The IRS website at irs.gov has a really good search engine. You can pull up some very helpful free information about small business accounting, at least from a tax perspective, on their website. But that's a really good piece of advice. So we shouldn't be afraid to ask questions of these professionals who are serving us, and don't feel like any question is stupid when you're asking somebody who you're paying to keep your finances in order.
That's correct.
Well, tell us a little bit, Bill, about how we can learn more about you and the resources at your website. Where are you going to be speaking soon? So we've got listeners all over the country, even all over the world, who want to know more about you, how to find out more, and where we can go to get more of Bill Collier.
Okay. Well, my website is collierbiz.com, collierbiz.com. And my book is available from my website or on Amazon.com. In fact, it's on just about all the online bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
I typically, most of my speaking engagements are here around the St. Louis metro area, and I currently am not doing any teleconferences or anything like that, although I do offer telecoaching for people that aren't in my own town.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a good way to...
Well,
I do that on an individualized basis, so if somebody wants to work with me, then we get together and set up a schedule.
Okay, so if anybody's interested in that, we can just email you through your website to see if there's a match for what we need?
Yes. What I would recommend is I do have a monthly email newsletter. In fact, I just sent January's out today.
Right, and I saw that. I subscribed to it. It's great.
Well, thank you. And that went out today. In fact, there was an article in there called Grow to the Next Plateau, and it would be very applicable to your small business owner audience who would be looking at growing to the next level with their business. So I'd urge the listeners to sign up for my monthly e-newsletter. It's right on the opening page of my website.
Right. That's good. And for those of you who are in Missouri, Bill also has a page at his website about where he's speaking over the course of the next couple of months, and there's a few speaking engagements there that may or may not be open to the public. You can check those out. Bill, I want to ask you a question about that newsletter that you send out once a month. Is that something that, this is a more general question, I guess it really does have to do with perhaps a way to grow your business so you can have more of a business and less of a job. Have you been able to use that electronic newsletter to actually generate new business so that you can, have a life and not just be all business?
Yeah, it has positively impacted my business. I've been doing it for about a year and a half now.
Uh-huh.
But there are so many things you can do to market for instance, small. I'm a home-based business myself. Collier Business Advisors, it's just me. My wife helps me a little bit, but it's pretty much just me. So I am, in fact, a home-based business.
Uh-huh.
And there are so many things you can do to market yourself, and a lot of things that you probably should not do when you're very small, one of which is throwing money at print advertising. When these people call and they say, hey, we've got this great opportunity in, the Yellow Pages, the end of the season hockey program, on our whatever it may be. And I see so many small business owners throwing good money away after that sort of thing and getting very little return for it. So,
you can use an electronic newsletter. Well, I definitely agree with that, and I hope everyone will take a look at lifestyleceo.com. We've got a show there on electronic newsletter advertising. Bill Collier, author of How to Succeed as a Small Business Owner and Still Have a Life. Thank you so much for being on the show. Guys out there, take a look at Bill's website at Collier, C-O-L-L-I-E-R, biz.com, and subscribe to that newsletter. It's great. Bill, thank you for being on the show today. You guys, I'll see you next week. In the meantime, get out there and break all the rules, build your own corporate ladder, and create the life you love.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.